Hello, friends. I'm your host, Christina, and you're listening to Radical Stepmoms, a podcast about the good, bad, and really ugly moments about raising a child that you didn't create. Here, I'll discuss the realities of co-parenting, the way stepmotherhood affects a marriage, the relationship with our stepkids, and most of all, navigating the relationship with ourselves. I want each episode to leave you feeling validated, empowered, and oh so radical. So pour yourself a LaCroix, a glass of red, or whatever, and listen in on Radical Stepmoms. Hello, you're listening to Radical Stepmoms. I am speaking with Stacy. She is an owner and supervisor of Pacific Northwest Guardian Ad Litem. That's a little mouthful, but this is another episode in my, I guess, what I am going to call my court series of helping individuals go through the things that come up in court stuff. And one of them is working with a guardian ad litem. So hi, Stacy, welcome.
Thank you for having me, Christina.
Yay, thank you. I think I found you online and I was like, oh my gosh, I need to talk to you.
Because super cyber stalker.
Yeah, I super cyber stalked you. I was looking at all the things and I really felt that there was a need to talk about this particular stuff that comes up within, you know, blended families, court stuff. Because I get questions all the time and I'm like, yeah, I'm not an expert. So I'm going to have an expert on to share. So how about we start with a little bit of background on your position, how you kind of got into this, your experience, and then I got rapid fire questions.
Sure. So I actually started back in 2012 as a volunteer guardian ad litem in Whatcom County, working with dependent children. So that was my introduction into guardian ad litem work. And I did that for a while. And then I was hired on as a staff member to the current company, which is Pacific Northwest Guardian Ad Litem. And I continued to do a little bit of, mostly dependency work. And then I have since, you know, gone through the training for Title 26 Guardian Ad Litem and decided that really wasn't for me. I know that there's a lot of people that do that. And I'm very familiar with, you know, what the requirements are, having gone through the training and working with families. And there's kind of an overlap sometimes between what dependency guardian ad litem is and family guardian ad litem is too. You know, well, we have families that are going through the process and they are either not married or getting a divorce or whatever it is. You know, usually we won't dismiss a case until there's a parenting plan in place anyway. So there is a lot of overlap. So I've been doing this for about 8 years, and I work with a great group of guardian ad litems who also do family law and dependency work. I do recruiting and training and supervision mainly, and support of the staff that I have right now.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. I'm always curious what kind of got you into this type of service?
So I have 4 kids of my own. I always love kids. I had a pretty terrible upbringing myself. And so most of the people that you find in at least the dependency world of work are people that for whatever reason are slightly broken and really just their hearts are in that place, right? Because the pay is not great. And so if you're doing it for that, you're never going to, you know, it will never be worth it. Right. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty much how I got there.
Yeah. You're talking to a social worker. So I get it.
Yeah. You know exactly what I'm saying. There's those helping people and those are the ones that, you know, come and stay. So.
Yep. So let's start with the basic question of what is a guardian ad litem and what exactly is the role?
Sure. So a guardian ad litem, regardless of what title they are, either 11, 13, or 26, the family law, incapacitated adult, or dependent child, their role is very straightforward. It is to investigate independently and collect information, interview people, and then make recommendations to the court as to what is in that person's best interest. So even if it's an adult, that's still your role. Usually with family law, we're talking about kids and custody and who should live where and what that parenting schedule looks like. In dependency, it's, you know, where the child should be placed, you know, how much time should they have with that parent, how can they safely be returned home, that kind of thing. So that's pretty much the big basic overview of it, is to be very independent and do your job and collect and be like the eyes and ears for the court.
Okay.
Right? So it's this impartial, independent person. You know, it's not mom's attorney and dad's attorney telling the court things. It's this, you know, impartial.
Unbiased. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So going into that, you're always going to piss one side off, right? I mean, that's
sure.
Kind of a given. So.
Right. Yeah. So from my understanding, this a guardian ad litem is usually appointed by a judge, not necessarily the parent.
So it can be. It depends. And every county has like their own registry and how they do things and who pays for what. Like in Skagit County, for example, there is court pay guardian ad litems, and those guardian ad litems are selected off a registry, and it kind of rotates, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like whoever's next up on the registry is who gets the assignment. In Whatcom County, there is no court pay, and they do use the same, you know, rotation of a guardian ad litem schedule, right? And the attorneys can strike a guardian ad litem. Like they can strike, you know, each party could strike one, so you could essentially strike the first two guardian ad litems off the list. It depends mm-hmm. on what the attorneys want and what it really does and what their working relationship is with those guardian ad litems. You know, some okay. people don't have any issue with whoever's next up on the list. You know, they've gone through the training, you know, and then other people have kind of a bias towards one or another and don't want that guardian ad litem. There's also cases where, you can agree on, you know, like the parents' attorneys will agree on a private guardian ad litem that's not a court pay. So
okay.
Yeah, that's an option too.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what can, so like the process, so the judge is like, okay, this is kind of getting sticky or out of hand, or, you know, can't really make a decision because we don't have enough information. Mm-hmm. So we're going to have the guardian ad litem come in, and then what can the parents expect going from there?
So the first thing you should expect is to be contacted by the guardian ad litem. If you have an attorney, they're going to work through your attorney usually and make sure that they're aware that, you know, they've been appointed to the case or assigned to the case, and they're going to contact you. And their job is to contact as many collateral information pieces that are out there, right? So they're gonna contact you, they're gonna talk to all your references, they're gonna talk to, you know, the kids, they're gonna talk to the kids' teachers, they're gonna talk to the kids' doctors, they're gonna get medical records. It's a very intense, thorough,
invasive. Yeah.
It's invasive, it is.
Yeah.
And if you get to a point where the court has decided that you need a guardian ad litem, right? It's because things have already gotten pretty icky, right? Mm-hmm. In court, and there's not going to be an agreement, and nobody can foresee an agreement. That's when a guardian ad litem would come in.
Okay. So then at that point, I mean, I would imagine, especially like the parenting side, it's like, okay, all of your stuff is going to get dug up. And I mean, like hopefully you don't have much to hide, right? And you're feeling good about it. What, I mean, how does one appropriately interact with the guardian ad litem? How do they, I mean, because I would imagine your bullshit sniffer is pretty good.
Well, and you know, it's like, that's kind of what we're trained for, is to look for discrepancies. Right. And to go, oh, well, that doesn't make sense, or that doesn't feel right, or this is a flag, right? Because everybody wants to put on this, I don't want to say a facade, right? Because it might be genuine,
but
you know, you obviously want to put your best foot forward, right? When you're working with a guardian ad litem. So my advice would be, yes, I understand that, but your best approach would be complete honesty, right? Like, we don't expect people to live this like pristine life, never having done anything, right? But if you're like, oh no, I've never, you know, I've you know, my wife is alleging that I, you know, drink while driving and I've never done that. And, you know, and then you do a background check and it turns out you've got 3 DUIs, right? Like your credibility totally tanks at that point. And anything you say going forward is going to be like,
When it would have been a lot easier to just be like, yeah, I had this on my record, but that was a long time ago, or, you know, whatever.
People change, right? Like we are just huge believers in people change. And so what happened 5 years ago or 7 years ago, or, you know, whatever, 15 years ago is not, does not make you the person you are today. So you're much better off just saying like, oh yeah, I had a problem with that. And, you know, I go to AA meetings or I just don't drink, or this was something in my past. But to not, to hide information is probably the worst thing you can do.
Yeah. So I hear a lot of like, you know, everyone is is concerned about what is in the best interest of the child.
Right.
Can you speak to what exactly that might mean? Cause I feel like that is, I mean, that's in my personal, life, that is something that, the other house and us constantly go back and forth, because she is committed to, I'm the mom, I know what's best for him. And it's like, okay, it's subjective. So how do we,
the most subjective statement you can make, right? And that's what we unfortunately don't have a really great definition for, right? So every kid is different, right? Every family is different. So what is true for house A in what is, you know, in that kid's best interest is probably not true for, you know, house B, right? So it's really just examining I'm like going to do a terrible job at this, but I'm going to do my best at, you know, who has the appropriate bond or relationship with the child, right? I think that's probably one of the most important things, right? It's like how bonded and attached the family, you know, mom, child, dad, child dynamic is. And then it comes down to, you know, stability and, you know, the age of the child and, you know, what the home situation looks like. And, you know, what, again, kind of the interview piece of it is how honest, you know, the families are during the interview, because, you know, you can, again, paint this rosy picture of like, this is my great family life, right? And maybe the other side of the family doesn't paint the same picture, but through your own investigation, you realize the family that didn't paint the great picture is actually the better one, right? For having primary custody, right? Or that kind of thing. So there's no cookie cutter definition for what is in best interest of a child, because it just varies so greatly.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I know that's,
no, I mean, yeah, I mean, it's all based on, you know, that certain child and their family. And I think it can get frustrating when, I mean, I would imagine, I've never, you know, interacted with the guardian light or anything like that, but I would imagine when you're in the position of being the home and you know, like the truth about certain things, or like, you know, it can be very nerve wracking to like hope that the guardian ad litem sees what the other house, you know, like, how does one, if, let me ask it this way. if house A is worried that you're not seeing what house B is really doing, is it appropriate to talk to the guardian ad litem about the other house?
Well, it's always appropriate to express your concerns. Okay. Right. Like it's always appropriate. I have a coworker who does a lot of family law cases, and she was flown to Wisconsin on an, like, she was like, oh my gosh, I have to take some time off. I'm going to Wisconsin. The kids are there for summer break, and dad is concerned that bad things were happening. Right. Mm-hmm. And so she left and she flew to Wisconsin, was there for a day and flew back. Right. I mean, it was just like this crazy whirlwind trip, but it's, you know, when a guardian ad litem is involved, the whole premise is to make sure that you're doing your own independent investigation, right? So if he's saying, I'm really concerned that XYZ is happening in Wisconsin, right? And he had the funds to do this, right? Pay for her to go to Wisconsin. She did an unannounced visit with the mom, you know, that kind of thing, right? I know. I mean, this is what it comes down to, though, you know? and then came back and amended her report, you know? So it's,
Wow.
I mean, there's, of course, and we understand going into it that there's going to be a bias on both sides, right?
Yeah.
Totally understand that. That's why, you know, again, walking into it, you know, you're going to make somebody really unhappy. It's one side's going to be unhappy, right? Maybe even both sides, right? Because, you know, we come up with a plan that's like not even what you wanted or not even what they wanted, but it's really what's in the kid's best interest, right?
Yeah. What are those interviews like with the kids? You know, like I would imagine on a professional level that it is difficult to have these kind of conversations. And I operate from like a trauma-informed stance of being a kid and being interviewed by someone that's making decisions about where you and feeling loyalty binds and all those sort of things. What is it? Yeah. What is it like to kind of talk to these kids?
The way that we, that most of the guardian ad litem I know approach interviewing children are to do open-ended questions, right? Never drill a kid. We're not forensic investigators. You know, we don't want to make the child feel malaligned with whoever they're with at the moment, you know? And so it's really a matter of just touching bases with that kid and, you know, like, hey, you know, can you tell me about like what your family life looks like? Like, what are your favorite things to do with mom? What are your favorite things to do with dad? You know, and just being very fair and equal to both sides, right? When you're talking about like, well, what does dinner time look like at mom's? Well, what does dinner time look like at dad's or other moms or, you know, that kind of thing. And so it's really not this sit down CPS kind of interview that you do with kids. It's very much, ask and let them talk, right? Just open the door and let them talk.
Yeah. And I would imagine that age kind of plays a factor in that too.
Huge. You know, I mean, teenagers, obviously, right? Like they're way more likely to be like, let me tell you why I don't want to live with my dad. Or let me tell you what I mean. It's not even, or I don't want to live with my mom. It's not even a matter of, you know, what's your bedtime routine like? You know, it's not like that with teenagers.
Right.
And then if you're talking about an infant, right, there's no questioning there, right? There's nothing to question there. You're going off of, you know, interviews with the parents and the family and their friends' references and the doctor's notes and things like that.
So aside from telling the truth and being, you know, transparent and stuff, is there a way for parents to prepare? Like I imagine like cleaning the house and, I have fresh baked cookies for you. Like come in.
I will tell you, bribery will get you nowhere, right? Like there's very strict rules usually that we have about like, you cannot accept gifts. You know, I mean, we're governed by the GLRs, which is, you know, it's very specific about remaining an unbiased, whether perceived or actual individual, right? So I would say, of course, clean your house, right? Like just prep like your in-laws are coming over or something, right? But again, being transparent, you know, trying to keep your house, you know, a little bit cleaned up, understanding that most of us that do this work have kids, have families, understand that, you know, if your house looks like a tornado hit it, because you weren't expecting us to show up, that's totally okay, right? Yeah. Like it's totally okay. Things that are not okay, right? Like if you're an active user, like don't have a blowtorch on the floor, right? I mean, it's you wouldn't think you'd have to say these things, but
yeah, that's a good one.
sorry, totally out of left field.
Wait, I'm looking at my questions here. Okay. What happens if you guys have your report and you have your, you know, recommendation and whatever, and there's a they disagree. Like one of the parents is like, no, like, can they say that? Like, what is?
Well, you can say it, and it almost always happens. Right?
Yeah, there's like an appeal, or is it like you need to do this for a time being and then come back to it? Or
I mean, at that point, it's up to the judge, Right. Okay. So like the guardian ad litem is a tool for the court, right, to collect this information and report back. And then it's up to whoever the judicial officer is to either adopt everything in the report, adopt some of the report, none of the report, you know. So that comes down to, you know, the judge. And honestly, the family law GLs that I know try to work within the confines of what the families actually want to accomplish, right? So, you know, talking to you and having those conversations is really going to shape their report and their recommendations. If we have a parent saying, I really only want to have my child here 2 days a week, she's not going to turn around and recommend 4 days a week, you know, sure, that kind of thing. So,
yeah,
but it's, you know, each, again, every family is different, every kid is different, and you can speak up and if either through your attorney or pro se, if you don't have one, and just say, this doesn't really work for me. And, you know, the judge's ruling is the judge's ruling. And usually you can be like, okay, well, then I'll have to come back to court, you know?
Right. Kind of, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then commit to that time and money. So
yeah,
that's usually the deterrent there. Yeah.
Yes. Not a cheap road to go down.
So, how much sleep do you lose over this kind of, like, I mean, I would imagine that it's, you know, you're trying to, again, like, consider the child's best interest, and what you say holds a lot of power. Have you had situations where it is really difficult to kind of decide what your stance is?
Yes. And I would be lying if I said otherwise. You know, there was it wasn't a family law case, but I had a trial yesterday, and I literally lost like a whole night's sleep last night because I kept thinking, like, if I would have said this one thing, mm-hmm. right, it might have shifted differently. But I don't know, that's my own anxiety, right, like wrapped up in it. And so I think that, you know, people that have done this for a long enough time know that they're going to make people upset, right? Like, it's can't make everybody happy. And it's doing the best job that we can with the information that we have at the time, and knowing that ultimately we're not the ones who make the final decision, right? Sure. But again, it goes back to the judge. But it is stressful, you know, and I, there's a reason I don't do, you know, a lot of the family law stuff. It's because it's so stressful. It's so stressful.
Yeah.
That are just, and it's very hard, you know?
Yeah. It's like that and being a mediator, I would just be like, nah, man, like, can't you just get along?
I can do mediation a lot better, I think, you know what I mean? Because then, like, if you're at mediation, at least you're probably talking to the other person.
Yeah.
On some level, you know, so some of these family law cases are just very contentious to the point where, you know, there's all these websites, you know, available to share notes and visitation schedules and, you know, the parenting time schedule and things like that. So mm-hmm. yeah, it's very exhausting on a lot of levels, but it's also very rewarding, right?
So, and very needed. I think that it gives the kids a voice. And it's not, you know, it's kind of taking away the back and forth of the parents and saying, hey, this is an outside person who is, you know, going to advocate for you. Right. You know, if we choose to see it that way. I know, like, guardian ad litems can be super scary because they're invasive. They're going to dig up your shit and they're going to expose it. And, you know, it is what it is, but hopefully, I mean, I've talked to a lot of, you know, stepmoms who have gone through it and stuff. And, you know, it's super anxiety provoking, just because you don't know, you know, what they're thinking or what they're going to, you know, take away from it. And, you know, not trusting the other house to be real and transparent and just hoping the guardian ad litem kind of sees that and can put the pieces together. Yeah, all of it.
It is difficult because if, you know, by the time you get a guardian ad litem appointed, things have broken down so badly amongst, you know, parents that they have to have this third party brought in. And I think that it's really difficult because if people that are going through a divorce could remember that at one point you liked this other person, right? Like, that's the thing. At one point you did like mm-hmm. this other person mm-hmm. and you did probably trust their judgment, right? Mm-hmm. But when emotions run high and people get flooded and they just, you know, dig in their heels, it's really hard because then they put kids, you know, smack in the middle of it. And then yeah. a guardian ad litem comes in and tries to dig out, you know, dig the kid out of the hole, right? And figure out like who's saying what, really, what is in this child's best interest and things like that. And it's very complicated, right? And it's an expensive, long, lengthy process for both mm-hmm. parties, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So if at all possible, avoid having a guardian ad litem, you know, yeah. I get that that's so much easier said than done.
Right. Yeah. That's the hope. Yeah. Any other final comments, thoughts, advice for those who are possibly going to go through this?
Do you know that you're being heard? I think that, you know, people that do family law GL work are there because they really do want what's best for the kids, right? And that's always going to be, you know, taking the parents', you know, wishes and beliefs into consideration, you know, whatever the cultural piece is for house A, you know, even if it's not for house B, still very important for that child, you know? Mm-hmm. So I just, again, the transparency piece, understanding that while it feels like you're under a microscope, because you are, right? That, you know, there's also this belief that people change. And so if you have some really scary, icky stuff in your background, that's okay too. You know, like mm-hmm. we are all not the same people we were a decade ago, you know? Mm-hmm. So
yeah.
Yeah.
Thank goodness.
Thank goodness we all change. But those are my takeaway pieces of it, I suppose.
Awesome. Thank you. So we're going to take a break and then we're going to come back and Stacey's going to share a little bit of her personal experience of not only being a stepmom, but now her partner is now a stepmom. So we are going to dive into that when we come back.
Super fun.
All right, Radical Mamas, I want to talk about the first resource I found as a stepmom. Stepmom Magazine was a game changer for how I navigate this role. It's an online magazine with articles from all the top step parenting experts on all things stepmom. Each issue is packed with insights, tips, and validation from licensed therapists, published authors, and stepfamily professionals who know and live the stepmom life. Stepmom Magazine also has ebooks specific to special topics like disengaging, being a full-time stepmom, parental alienation, and so much more. They are all available to download right now. I subscribed years ago and it was exactly what I needed to feel less alone and more supported. Getting that monthly email telling me the new issue is out is like getting a warm hug from another stepmom. To subscribe, head to stepmommagazine.com and use the code RADICAL20 to save 20%. If you find something that makes you say, yes, hell yes, me too, send me a DM on Instagram and let me know. I love hearing from you. Again, that's stepmommagazine.com and use the code RADICAL20 to save you 20%. All right, so we are back. When I first reached out to Stacey, I was just like, yeah, I want to talk about, you know, your experience being a guardian ad litem. And then through this conversation, you're like, oh, for your podcast about being a stepmom. I was a stepmom. My wife's a stepmom. And I'm like, oh my gosh, let's talk about that too. So Stacey, what's your story?
Oh my gosh. My story is so colorful. I feel like that's how I can always start off. It's like so colorful. So my background and my family's situation is, I feel, pretty unique, I guess. I mean, we all have very unique families, right? So when I was 17, I had my first son. And when I was 19, I had my second son. And when I was 21, I married my husband, Adam, who is a fantastic person inside and out, right? And he adopted my second youngest son and was a step parent to my oldest son. They both had the same bio dad. I know this is going to sound super weird. Uh-huh. Both have same bio dad, and bio dad relinquished on second kid, but not on first kid, right? First kid at the time, I know it sounds weird. First kid at the time was five, I want to say. So he kind of had an established relationship mm-hmm. with his dad, kind of, sort of. Mm-hmm. And it was fine. But I will tell you that watching Adam try to step parent Brandon, who is my oldest son, was extremely difficult. You know, we were so young and, you know, stressed, and, you know, neither one of us had really great examples for parents. I'm going to be honest about that, mm-hmm. but he did a great job. He did absolutely the best job that you could as a step parent and a parent. Right. And so after we had been married about 18 years, I finally got to this point where I was like, I just don't think I can keep going like this. You know? So when Adam and I met, I was dating a girl at the time, and he knew that. And it was kind of a conversation that we had had throughout our marriage. And, you know, we split up one time after we'd been married about 7 years, because I was really struggling with this, like, I don't know if I can really stay married to a guy, you know, kind of thing. Uh-huh. And in that process, we had had 2 more kids. So now I've got 4 kids, right? And it was just a very difficult place to be. But after mm-hmm. we'd been married about 18 years and my 2 oldest kids were out of the house, my 3rd youngest son was, he was a sophomore, I want to say, in high school. And then my youngest son was 12. So I was like, I can't keep doing it. And I feel bad because he feels like there's something wrong with him, right? Mm-hmm. That our relationship isn't working really well. And that was
like, no, it's because you're a boy.
It is because you're a boy. It is. There's nothing else except that it's because you're a boy. And, you know, we joke about it now because he's like, you know, I'm just very attached to being a boy. And I'm like, yeah, I would never, ever ask you not to be a boy. So we got divorced, right? And it was extremely amicable. You know, like, we're going to split custody of the kids. We're going to split all the assets. We're going to, you know, I mean, like, there was no mm-hmm. argument about it. There was no hard feelings, right? So there's like that backstory. I quickly married somebody else because I don't know why, but I did. I quickly married somebody else who had twin daughters through her previous marriage. And one of them has pretty significant special needs. And they were both born preemies. Right, like micro kings, like very preemie. Mm. And so I had always thought, while being married to Adam, like, I don't know how he does it, right? Like the step-parent thing. Like, I don't think I could ever be a step-parent. It is just so difficult. So even being a step-parent in his role, where he didn't even have to like contend with another dad that was really in the picture, because that dad wasn't really in the picture.
Uh-huh. Which is a whole extra layer. Like, the step parents that don't have to do that, it's more of just your relationship with the kids that is complicated. When you have to deal with the ex,
yes, right? Totally different story. Totally different story. So I rushed into this marriage that came with these 2 stepkids. And I will tell you that I actually got along really well with their other mother. Right? Like, I had a lot of empathy for her, and I felt like she really was left with a lot of work to do by herself, right? The kids were young, I mean, really young, you know, like 4 at the time. And again, one of them had pretty significant special needs, and she was just all of a sudden on her own, right? And so, you know, a lot of it was trying to balance that schedule and be respectful of her in that way, and try to be supportive of her, you know, mm-hmm. as much as I could be. And it was really odd because the person I married was just kind of very hands-off, right? And I don't know how much in their relationship she was a supportive partner or not, mm-hmm. you know, anyway. But when we were married, it felt like a lot of the parenting of the girls shifted to me, and, you know, when they were here. And I, again, kind of back into that, you know, I never thought I would be a step parent piece of it. And so mm-hmm. kind of balancing, you know, what is my role and how much parenting am I supposed to be doing, or is, you know, assumed that I'm going to be doing, was really, really awkward. And then, you know, for a while there, my boys were helping out with the girls. And then that became kind of an issue, because then the stepmom, or not the stepmom, their other mom was not super comfortable with that, you know, just because of her own beliefs. Like she just was not really comfortable with that. And so that created this kind of weird dynamic where it's like, is this okay to do with the kids or is this not okay to do with the kids? And my current spouse was, I would just say, not helpful, right? You know, with that, it was kind of like, you know, the kids were here because it was her residential schedule, but she didn't spend any of that time parenting. Right. So now I've got all my kids, like this divorce, this crazy mixed up family, a kid with special needs, right?
Damn.
I have no idea what I'm doing. Right. I'm like, I don't know. I don't even know what I'm doing. Like,
I think you're speaking to, just to interject for a second, I think what you described right there of not exactly knowing your role and not exactly knowing what you're supposed to be doing, or, and you always look to your partner to be like, hey, you're the parent. You need to kind of help define what this is all about. But kind of similar to you, like I entered into my stepson's life when he was three. Which I tell my husband this now, where I'm like, you really had me fooled, because I thought that he was like this go-getter dad and he had it all together and he was super. And me now having a three-year-old, we have a three-year-old together now, I understand, like, you're still, even though you're like 3 years into it, you're still figuring shit out, right? And you're still like, I mean, you figure shit out the entire length of being a parent, but I had it in my head like, oh, he has this all figured out, I'm just going to step in to help. Meanwhile, he's looking at me going, oh, you're going to like fix things and you're going to like be there to do things that I don't know how to do, which just puts so much pressure on the step parent. And you're looking at your partner, one, losing any sort of like affection or attraction to them, because you're like, yo, what the fuck?
This is not what I thought I was signing up for. This is not it at all, right?
Yeah. So,
yeah, you know, and I didn't mind on a lot of things and on a lot of levels, right? Like I used to go volunteer in the kindergarten classroom with her, like with one of the twins, right? And, you know, and I did that pretty religiously, I guess, right? You know, and it was kind of, but it's like, but I'm not the parent, right? Like it comes back to, but I'm not the parent. And so then what ended up happening too, was that my youngest son became extremely resentful, right? Over this new situation that was happening, right? That I had divorced his dad. Now, so even though I had known for years and years and years that I was a lesbian, and my ex-husband knew this, my kids did not know this at all, right? Sure.
Yeah.
But when I came out, they were all like, you're joking. Like they thought it was a joke. Like you're joking. I'm like, no, I'm really not joking. Uh-huh. Like, you know, if you would have seen me 5 years ago, I had longer hair. I didn't look so fish. So look.
To interject again. So my mom did the same thing to me. So she was married to my dad and then they divorced and then she got married to my stepdad. And so each marriage was 13 years.
Oh, wow.
And throughout this and stuff, like, and I was growing up, you know, my mom always had like girlfriends and stuff. And like, I knew, like, I was very versed in, you know, sexuality and different genders and all that kind of stuff. But I never really attributed that to like my mom, you know, I mean, she had gay friends, but I was just like, okay, you have gay friends, whatever.
Right.
And then it wasn't until after she divorced my stepdad, where she's like, yeah, so I met someone, her name is, and I'm like, and then, I mean, it only took like 30 seconds and I go, oh, okay. That makes sense. But at the same time, I'm like, wait, what? Like it's definitely like a shift in, oh, okay. Yeah. Like, let me get caught up here. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They were kind of like, what? You know, my kids, they're very open and understanding, but I think for my older, especially my second oldest son, he had more of an issue of the fact that we were getting divorced. Right. Like he was like, wow, not so much the sexuality piece of it. Although they were just clearly shocked over the whole thing. Right. So I didn't get it, you know, the appropriate amount of time for them to acclimate to even me being divorced right before I got into this other relationship. And that was a bad mistake. Right. It really was. Like if I could, I usually don't say like, if I could go back and change things, I would. But in this case, I definitely would have changed something, right? Mm-hmm. Like I wouldn't have done what I did. It was bad call all around. So, you know, the circle of like being a step parent and then like, but not really even being a step parent, but like being the parent, you know, when the kids were here, really just added this layer of, you know, what the fuck, mom, right? Like from my kids, right? Because my youngest son, you know, who's always been the baby, is all of a sudden like, why are these kids here? I don't like these kids. They're bratty kids and you're not parenting them right and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, hey, buddy, when you have your own kids, you can parent them however you want, right?
So
it was just, it was very messy. And then, you know, fast forward, get a divorce, don't have anything to do with them. And as a matter of fact, and this is not something that I think under normal circumstances I would have pushed so hard on, but I thought it was really important for my kids not to have any relationship with that person or their family, because it was a very toxic, it's just very toxic. And so it was, again, one of those situations where it's like, and now I have to tell my kids, like, I know you're basically adults, but, and you can make your own decisions. Truth be told, that wasn't really an issue because they weren't real happy with the situation anyway, right? Mm-hmm. And then I was divorced a reasonable amount of time and I started dating this other person.
You know, so you kind of learned a little bit after that experience.
I can be taught, apparently. I can be taught. So I was divorced and yeah, I was not in this, you know, lesbians have this
negative. Second date U-Haul?
Yes, right? Like exactly. So I was like, not gonna do that, right? We're not doing that. And so my current wife and I, like when we started dating, like I really did not have the kids, you know, she, like when we were dating and hanging out and stuff like that, I just didn't have the kids around her. And at this time, I think my youngest was probably 14-ish, you know. And once I did introduce her to them, right, they just really clicked, you know. And I think a lot of it is because I think my wife is a fantastic person, right? But she also, you know, kind of, I don't want to say like got it easy in the sense that she only had to do this for a few years and, you know, until I turned 18. But they really just had a good relationship. And I think my youngest son had a lot of respect for my wife and, you know, it was a fairly, I wouldn't say it's been hitch-free. That's for sure. You know, he has still said some things that I'm like, you absolutely cannot talk to your stepmom like that, you know, kind of thing, right? Yeah. But it's been pretty good. And, you know, she never wanted to have kids, right? I knew that. Never wanted to have kids. So the fact that, you know, it was a conversation that we had pretty frequently is like, you know, like I come with kids, right? Like that's the thing, it's like I come with kids. And so she's like, no, I know you do. And it's totally worth it to be married to you. And I will do my best, you know, but we've had some trying times with my youngest son, right? So, but now he's 18 and he's, you know, he knows it all. And he's off to live his best life. And, you know, it's been an interesting run. Like my family, like I said, is just very colorful. And, you know, the fact that my current wife is still very open to the relationship that I have with, my ex-husband, right? You know, that she is respectful of the fact that like we have kids and we're always going to talk about kids and we're, you know, to this, you know,
right.
Eventually we'll be talking about grandkids, right?
Right. Weddings and I mean, college graduations and that's what like stepmoms, it's like, yeah, once they're 18, that's great. But then there's the other shit because it doesn't end.
It doesn't end. Yeah.
Has your ex-husband remarried?
He has not yet, but he is engaged.
Okay.
And so, I mean, that's coming and he's going to be a step parent again because his fiance has a 5-year-old daughter. So he almost is doing the whole starting over thing. And I'm like,
empty nester.
we're planning a trip, back down to Mexico in November. And it's like, oh, we're coming back the night before Thanksgiving. And so we're talking about like where we're going to do Thanksgiving. And then I'm like, oh, you know, we'll just do it at Adam's house. You know, I mean, like it just makes it easier and it makes more sense, right? For us to be like, you know, we can have Christmas at my house one day. We'll do birthday parties at my house sometimes, Christmas at his house sometimes, or, you know, sometimes the kids will just split between the two houses. It is really nice to have that, right?
Yeah.
Like, to be like, yeah, it's fine. And it did take her a while to get kind of comfortable with that idea, but that was something that I was very...
Your wife?
Yes.
Okay.
Right? Because she's like, that's kind of weird that you're still hanging
out. What about your ex-husband's fiance? What's that relationship like?
So she doesn't live locally. So I don't really have much of a relationship with her. And I know that she... I mean, I have the utmost respect for her and what she does. She's a teacher and, you know, her daughter's five. I don't think there's any idea that she's going to be stepping into the step-parent role, right?
Mm-hmm. Like, when all the kids are mainly grown.
Or grown, right?
Yeah. But
when they were not grown, he moved somebody into the house that I just was like having a meltdown over, right? Ooh. I was like, no, this is wrong. I mean, like, I really just had like a huge like reaction to it where I was like, nope, it's wrong. It's wrong. It's wrong. You know, and you're not their mom, and you're not going to pretend like you're their mom. You know, I'm going to be very honest that I had that reaction, you know?
Yeah. I've been on the receiving end of that reaction. So
I'm sure.
But
it's, I mean, you know, like those are my kids, you know, and you're crazy. And I'm sure this isn't going to last, you know, and it didn't. And she moved out after a few months and she was crazy, you know, right? Like, but his current fiance, I'm super excited about, you know, like I am. And I really want him to be happy and to have that life that he always thought he would have, like happily ever after, you know, kind of thing. And so it's very different.
Yeah. I absolutely love when I'm able to talk to a stepmom who's also the bio mom, because you get all angles and, you know, everything that you just said of how you reacted to that girlfriend, that is like what a stepmoms feel all the time.
Oh, yeah.
It's so real. And I get it. And I also just think there's that period where the mom, you know, has to move through those feelings, right? And figure out, okay, like if she ended up sticking around or, and she proved that she wasn't crazy and maybe she, you know, whatever, that, yeah, it's just, there's so many interconnected like parts to it. And I'm technically a bio mom now, right? Like if my husband and I were to divorce and he were to remarry and there would be another person, like, but I think it there's also something to it when I was because I was a stepmom first and then became, you know, a bio mom. And so in a large way, I feel like I always have the stepmom lens on,
right?
Where I think I would probably move through those emotions differently, than if it, you know, if I was a bio mom first or whatever. But yeah, I always love getting the different, perspectives for sure.
I'm not even gonna lie about that. You know, it's just one of those, you're just super protective of your kids. And I do think that if it was different and I had, I didn't think that she was a nut job to begin with, it totally would have been a different experience. But yeah, having been there, you know, it was super fun. So I always say there's nothing worse in the world, right, than to have like this abundance of people to love your child, right? Like, of course, the more people to love your child, the better, right? And so that's kind of like what I really try to go back to whenever, you know, I'm talking with families and they're having issues with like, well, I don't like the stepmom and I don't like that. And I'm like, hey, man, if she loves your kid, right? Like, and she's doing her best, that's good for your kid, right? It's really hard. And it's so much easier for me to say that, right? Than it is being in that moment where you're having like this actual like fight, flight, freeze response to like, absolutely not, you know? I mean, kind of having to calm down and walk yourself through it. And kind of, it takes a long time to build that trust, right? Mm-hmm. It does. And I think back at like my time at being a step parent, and I can't even imagine how, mom on that end felt. I think that she actually felt pretty relieved that I was I wasn't involved as I was, you know, but I still think that there's this you know, it's just so difficult, right?
Yeah.
And can I trust this person regardless, right? And that is just an extremely hard place to be. And I do think that you can work through it, right? Mm-hmm. And I think there's lots of books out there that help people walk through it. And, you know, family counseling is a great tool if people are civil open enough and open enough to want to do that. It is absolutely a great tool, you know? Yeah. So.
Yeah, I think going back to those, you know, immediate reactions that you were having and stuff, I just want to say, like, I feel like I mean, I've said it before, that the mom has such a powerful role in helping the kids have a relationship with stepmom. Wow. And I mean, you experienced that being a stepmom. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, the more that the mom is saying, you're not the mom, you're not the mom, it's like, we need to like crack open that word and let it mean other things. Absolutely. Because just because I mean, these are conversations I've wanted to have with my bio mom situation, where her putting her finger down on me and trying to, you know, hammer me into the ground by reminding me, you're not the mom, you're not the mom, you know, you need to know your place, isn't allowing me to discover what my role can be. And that I don't need to be the mom. You've got that figured out. That's fine. But the more that you focus on this issue, it's causing a rift in my home, and it's causing a rift within my, like, all the things with my stepson. He's confused. If she were to just leave that alone, it'd be like, okay, I can figure out what being a stepmom means, because that is worthy of exploring. You know, it doesn't need to be a threat. So it's just, like, the way that we are welcomed or not welcomed into the role plays a huge part.
Absolutely. Right. And like my reaction to him moving that person in, like, I did not let my kids see that. I'm sure that
And that makes you normal.
But, you know. But I did let my ex-husband know that I felt that way. You know, I mean, I think it's one of those things. And he's like, oh, she's not interested in being a stepmom. And she wasn't, right? But it was more, you know, like, I thought she was not a great influence to have around them.
Sure. Right? Yeah.
But I think the more, and this is extremely unlikely, right? But like, the more you can work on a relationship with bio mom, right? Mm-hmm. The better that's going to be. And I think, even if you can start off from a place of saying, like, I know your mom, right? Like, I know your mom. I am not here to be mom. Like, I'm here to be stepmom, and I'm here to love your kid as much as I can and support them and help shape their life and, you know, be another positive influence in their life. Like, who's going to say no to that? Right. Like, oh,
many
I don't want that person.
No to that.
Yeah. Like, you're like, but because they had that initial reaction, right? So it's like, for it a little bit, right? Because this is somebody that your person who at one point, again, let's go back to at one point you trusted and liked this person, you trusted their judgment, you're not with that person anymore. So you just kind of that reminder that at one point you did, and this is the person that they're choosing to marry or partner with, you know, and have around their child, right? So, you know, and I'm a huge advocate of equal rights for parents, right? Mom, dad, doesn't matter, right?
Like, yep.
So yeah, it's a complicated world.
And I again just love how, because I'm always telling my listeners, like, you think you're alone in things. You think stepmoms, like stepmoms are everywhere. I wasn't even looking to chat with a stepmom for this episode, and here you were, and you had a plethora of things to share.
That's right.
it's more common than you think. How I'm going to end with this question. Knowing all the different things that you know about, you know, being a stepmom yourself, and then helping your, you know, ex-husband be a step parent and all that kind of stuff, how do you currently support your wife in her role?
I want to make sure that she feels like we can always talk about issues with the kids, right? So that's one of the things that, and of course, not in front of the kids, right? But if there's an issue and she wants me to listen to what she has to say, I picked her because I love her and I trust her. And I believe that she always has the best interest of my kids at heart, period. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's times where the kids have said something that I probably would have tolerated hearing, right? Like my youngest one is very snarky, right? Yeah. But I absolutely will not tolerate him talking to her like that. Mm. You know what I mean? So I think if anything, I actually am more protective of her in that regard, mm-hmm. although she's a big girl and she can handle herself just fine, yeah. right? You know, but it's making it's sure still... that she feels that she is heard and that her opinion is valid and her feelings are valid. And I always keep in my mind, in my filter, that she never even wanted to have kids, right? Mm-hmm. So she's, you know, she's spent years working with juveniles through mm-hmm. her job, right? So her perception of like kids and teens and youth, it's actually kind of interesting, right? When she'll say like, well, you know, here's my perspective of it. And you're like, oh God, I didn't even look at it that way. You know, mm-hmm. like, I really appreciate that. So it's, mm-hmm. it's acknowledging that she never really wanted to do this, but was totally willing to do it. And she is so much better at it than I'm sure she thinks she is.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's huge. Having your partner support like that is, I mean, sometimes that's a make or break type of deal where I talk to so many stepmoms where they're like, I just want to be able to openly talk to my partner about how I feel about the kids without them getting defensive. I just want to be able to share this because, you know, I mean, if we're trying to be viewed as a parent, but then we're not able to speak openly about our parenting observations or our parenting opinions or whatever, then we're the nanny.
Right.
You know?
Right. Oh, she actually taught my youngest son how to drive. Like, I was like, she was like, you're freaking him out. You're stressing him out in the car. And he was like, the last of four. Like, you think I'd like have this down, right? Because every time I got in the car, I'd be like, freaked, like just super stressed. And she's like, no, I'll do it. You know, so there's like, we have very different roles and it's worked out really, really well. But I think, you know, when you have a step parent and you expect them to interact with your kid and kind of be a prime figure in their life, right? Like what they say matters. And I think, you know, making sure that you have open dialogue with, you know, your wife or your husband and whoever the step parent mm-hmm. is and making sure they feel heard is just so pivotal for success mm-hmm. in your own relationship.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Let alone your stepkids. Right.
So. Right. Yep. That's great wisdom to end on. Stacy, thank you so much for joining. I really appreciate it. You are a wealth of knowledge. So everyone, I hope you gained something from this episode. As always, be well and stay radical. All right, ladies, the episode is over, but do you want a little more? Come find me on Instagram and join the community at Radical Stepmoms Podcast, or schedule a one-on-one session and get that personalized support, or become a Radical member and gain access to exclusive content like bonus episodes and merch. Radical Stepmoms is so much bigger than a podcast. Check out the details in the notes on this episode.